We're delighted to welcome those who are visiting in our assembly this morning. Glad you have come and hope that as a result of the time you spend with us, you'll be glad as well. At this time of year, we are ordinarily concentrating on the passage of the moments and the weeks and the months and the years. It really is just a line on the calendar that divides 1993 from 1994, and we're not really absolutely sure. In fact, perhaps we are sure that that's not an exact date, that miscalculations were made, that it probably is closer to 2001 or 2000 since the time of the Lord's birth. But I intend to capitalize on thoughts that are put in our mind by the circumstance of the calendar, and to think with you today about time and your life. I hope that you will evaluate who and what you are this morning. I hope you have asked, and I hope especially you will ask today where you are going. What about the future? We know so little about our personal future. Things have happened to us already unanticipatedly, and there will be many more. There are probably only two things that we know from the circumstances that surround us outside what God has told us. And that is that we will die, and that before we die, we are likely to have our share of both pleasure and pain, heartache and joy. And Jesus says in the 5th or the 6th chapter of Matthew in verse 34 that we should not concern ourselves with tomorrow, because tomorrow will take care of itself. That every day's evil is sufficient to it. Every day's challenge, that's his idea. Every day's burdensome challenge will be sufficient for that day. But the text that I want to focus on today says that we do need to pay attention to the future. Jesus was speaking about things over which we have no control, things that are in the hands of God, and that includes a lot of things. But Paul, in the 5th chapter of Ephesians, is talking about things over which we do have control. The future is not fixed for us. And so if you're sitting here this morning saying, well, everything is pretty well routed, I can feel within myself that I'm destined to do certain things and to be a certain way and to have a certain disposition. But if that's how you feel, your feelings are very deceptive. This text says that we are to pay attention to how we walk, that is, how we live. Paul says, not unwisely, but wisely, redeeming the time because the days are evil. And then he adds, don't be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is. There is a companion passage in Colossians that says we are to walk in wisdom toward them that are without, redeeming the time. To let your speech be always with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer each one. There are three things I want to talk about in connection with this text, and that is, what is the time? Redeeming the time. There are some key words in Paul's language here. Redeeming is a marketplace term. It's based upon the agora, the marketplace, and it means to market. We have a lot of metaphors in our own language, and we don't stop to think that when we ask the question, how did you spend your time, that we have already talked about this very idea. You will spend your life, and you'll obtain something in exchange for it. And that's Paul's idea. You're going to invest your life in something. And the question is, what will you have when the bargain is complete? The word time in this text is not just time without discrimination. It is a word which in Galatians 6:10 is translated opportunity. As you therefore have opportunity, do good to all men, especially to those that are of the household of faith. It is often translated as season. It is so translated in Acts chapter 1 and verse 7 when Jesus says to the inquiring disciples, it's not for you to know the times or the seasons that are in God's control. A season, a time like this time, is time matched to purpose. You know, in other words, the time here is your life. And your life and my life, that's a segment of all the passage of the moments that has a purpose. And we need to get a sense of what that purpose is. Moses said in the 90th Psalm, the days of our years are 70 years, or if by reason of strength, 80 years. And then he says in the 12th verse of the Psalm, so teach us to number our days, that we may get us a heart of wisdom. That's what Paul was saying. He really echoes Moses. Don't walk with foolishness. Don't live your life senselessly. But walk with understanding. Walk with perception. And realize that the days are evil. The days of evil, or the days of evil in this particular case, has reference to times of trial. The 6th chapter, verse 13, speaking about putting on the armor of God, says that you may be able to stand in the evil day. An evil day is not just a time when ungodly things are all around you and the society has gone to spiritual pot. What it's talking about is the fact that you're going to face some serious challenges to your choices. And that if you don't have your head on tightly, you're going to be driven in who knows what direction. So redeem the time. David in the 39th Psalm says, Lord, make me to know mine end, what it is. Let me know how frail I am. That's an important thing. Because if we understand just exactly how very frail we are, we will understand our need for God. So, what that leads us to ask is, what is the purpose of life? I tell you, if you've ever asked that question, you're already well ahead of most people. And I'm encouraged if you've wondered in your heart, what is this all about? It's not just an academic activity of a few philosophical minds. I don't care how humble our life may be. We're going to ask that question, or we need to ask that question. I'm astonished at the people who just go through life acting on the basis of what they feel like doing. That young man last evening who was in the battle for the national championship, who made a mistake on the sideline. There were a lot of mistakes made in the game on both sides. He knew what it was all about. He understood that whoever won that game was likely to be counted for a whole year, national football champion. But he forgot. And when he was standing in the midst of a group of players he knew couldn't have been on the field, did what he felt like doing and just pushed the other player. Cost him 15 yards. At a time when they were fighting just to keep the opposing team away from the goalposts. And a lot of us live life that way too. That's what causes fornication. We forget what the purpose of life is. And we just do what we feel like doing. That's why we have adultery. We forget what the purpose of life is, and we do this horrendous injury to a sober and tender covenant just because we felt like doing it and we thought it would bring us pleasure. It's the reason that a man in the Northeast, aggravated by his girlfriend's family, blew up 5 of them and would have destroyed more. He just did what he felt like doing. There was no concern in his mind at that moment of the long haul, what life is about, what the consequence of that might be. It has some picayune applications too. Some of us, not understanding the text that says, if any man will not work, neither let him eat. Doing what we feel like doing, we don't go to work. We don't like the job. It's onerous. It's beneath us. And the reason we do that is because we forget that we have been instructed to work with our hands the thing that is good, that we may have wherewith to give to those that have need. That diligence is a part of the purpose. In fact, I wonder about people who have so little focus in their lives that they just wander about in all directions, moving at the impulse of present feeling. I don't enjoy this. I'm not going to do it. Well, what will the consequence be? What is the purpose of our lives? The Bible has not been slow to answer that question. In fact, it's recorded on virtually every page. From the moment that God made Adam and Eve with a dream in his heart for them, it becomes obvious that he has a desire that they walk, live, conduct themselves in a certain way. And that the means by which they're going to achieve this dream is trusting him, listening to him, following him. But the two greatest commandments of all, you know, which is what Jesus gave in answer to a young scribe, or at least to a scribe in the 12th chapter of Mark, when he asked about the greatest commandment, and he said the greatest commandment is you are to love God with all your heart. That's what life's about. And the next, he said to it, is to love your neighbor as yourself. What's the purpose of life? Solomon said in the Old Testament that this is the end of the matter. All that have been heard, fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. Virtually the last verse, not quite, of the book of Ecclesiastes. And there are the words of Paul on the Areopagus, 17th chapter of Acts, that God made of one every nation of men to dwell upon the face of the earth, having given them their appointed seasons, the bounds of their habitation, that they should seek God. If happily they might feel after him and find him, though he's not far from any one of us. What's the purpose of life? To seek God. To pursue that. What have you decided life's purpose is? What would people say you have decided life's purpose is by observing your conduct? If you should ask 5 of your closest friends, or someone else should ask 5 of your closest friends, to speak to the question of what they think you treasure most of all, what's most important to you, what would they say? Knowing that they will judge you by what you talk about, knowing that they will judge you by what you choose to spend your life doing, what do you think the answer will be? It's a sobering thought. And one that we need to entertain. Is it making money? Is that what people would say? He's really interested in his job. Focus there. Is it having things? They are really deeply concerned to accumulate things. Love their house. Always attending upon the house. Great gardener. Loves growing things. Is it power? Would they say about you, would they say about me that he's interested, she's interested in being somebody here? Recognizably somebody here. Interested in being in a position of influence, in a position of directing others. Are those the purpose of life? Is that the kind of answer that just wise observation of the world would bring you to? Now, as Paul noted with some urgency, this is critical because you only have one life to spend. And you don't even know how long it will be. It's like a vapor that appears for a little while and then vanishes away. Like a watch in the night. Like water that is spilled upon the ground and cannot be gathered up again. One life to spend, and we're going into the marketplace. And there are all kinds of goods there. Power, things, money, happiness, notoriety. What are you going to invest in? The Scripture says, the Apostle Paul says, that you need to be wise as you make that investment. And wisdom says you need to know what God's will is. Now, I don't think I'm saying anything remarkable if I say to this audience this morning that the will of God has to take priority over everything else. And that God's will, certainly, whatever that is the purpose of life. Would other people who observe you say that that is what's most important to him or to her? The will of God. But here's a practical question. As we noted earlier, there are a lot of people who don't know what life's about and haven't thought much about it, and there are other people who know what life's about, have thought some about it, and if you were to ask them, they would give you the right answer. And some of them may be in this audience. Some of them may be members of this church. They wouldn't have any difficulty telling you what life is about, what the purpose of life is, what you ought to spend and invest your life in obtaining. If you were to ask them, if they were to gain the whole world, holding the world in their hands, possible to have absolute control over the whole of the universe, and then you would die with it in your hand, would you be profited anything? And they'd answer no. But they are doing what they feel like doing. They are doing what they feel like doing. And they forget what it's about. That is a very dangerous business. This lack of focus, this superficial religion, this announcement to everybody the right answer to the question, but no real commitment. How are we going to be able to redeem our lives? There's an answer, I think, to that. That is rather clear. And the first facet of it is by a single-minded devotion. It's something you notice in the Scripture very frequently. Straight is the gate and narrow the way that leads to life. Remember those words? Matthew 7:14. You know what that means? That means you've got to focus. You can't run all over the map. You can't do everything and be everything. That there are choices to be made, and they are critical choices. Some of us are running all over the map. Our life looks more like a big ink blot than it does writing. We haven't written anything. There's been no focus. There's been no discipline. Remember what Jesus said to Martha when she was so anxious about the kitchen. In Luke 10:41-42, he said, Mary has chosen the good part that cannot be taken away from her. all this kitchen business. That may be good for the time. All this job business, that may be good for the time. It certainly serves a purpose when it's focused in the right direction. But that won't last forever. And then the words of Paul in Philippians 3:13, this one thing I do. This one thing I do. If we're going to redeem our lives, if we're going to fill the life we have, not just full of good things. Some of us have lives filled with good things. But they're failed lives. And they're failed lives because they don't contain the things that are absolutely necessary. And then some of us have lives that are just filled with a terrible quiet crawl of things that don't matter much in any direction. And then some of us are struggling with lives that are even now filled with avarice and greed. And we have violated ethical principles to achieve those ends. And if we are called upon to remember them, we can remember the occasion when we did it. And we have not repented. Some of us have lives that are filled with lust. Desires that are not lawful before God. And we have not repented. And some of us may be even now engaging in lustful activity that we know, even as we involve ourselves in it, it is not only wrong, but it is destructive and it is doing me no good whatsoever, but much harm. And we have not repented. That's not single-minded devotion. And you can come to this meeting house until the walls fall outward. And it won't change anything. Until I decide to change. Until there comes into my heart a resolve that's born of the fact that God's in His heaven. That He runs the world. That He has absolute control of everything all around me. And that my purpose in life, because He created me for that purpose, is to do His will. Until I face that fact and focus my heart and my mind and my energies in that direction, everything is going to be wasted. There's another truth that we need to deal with. Once we've understood this matter of focus, making up our minds, that Christ is more important than our family, even as He urged us to recognize Matthew 10. That we're going to have to choose between the Father and the world, as John said in 1 John 2:15 and 17. Can't have both. That we're going to have to decide between God and mammon, as Jesus said in Matthew 6:24. You can't serve both of them. No man can serve two masters. Some of us are killing ourselves trying. And there can't be any exceptions. But we've got to quit despising the present. When I talk about redeeming, when Paul talks about redeeming, the time when he talks about spending your life wisely, he's not talking about living in the future. He's talking about living now. Tomorrow is always today when it gets here. Thomas Carlyle said that every day is doomsday. We don't feel that. And Carlyle said that we're not really wise until we feel it, that this is a critical hour. This very hour is a critical hour. Some people die suddenly. I don't know if I'll have another occasion to stand before this audience. have no idea. My life at this particular time, my life is congealed and condensed into this present moment. What I am, what I have done, what my values are, what the focus of my life is, what guilt hangs over me that's unreconciled with God, what rebellion toward His will that may be within me that has not been resolved. All those things. That's me. I don't have some future time. Guaranteed, signed, sealed, and delivered, you'll live another 10 years, you'll live another 20 years, you'll live another day, you'll live another week. You know, as someone said, life is an aggregate of all our todays, made up of hours with 60 unimportant minutes, days with 24 ordinary hours, years with 365 commonplace days, and a life with 70 uneventful years, if you let it be that. If you don't invest it properly, if you don't spend it right, if you don't exchange it for the right thing. So quit thinking about how wonderful the good old days were. Well, there were some wonderful times. Should be a cause for gratitude, all the good things that happened. And stop thinking that just the passage of time is going to achieve what you're looking for. Oh, just, you know, 1994, that's my year. It just sort of sounds good. 1994, and it's even. It's an even year. This will be a good year. 1993 was trash. I'm telling you, this was a bad year. And everything just went wrong. But 1994, the mere passage of time does not offer hope at all. Solomon said about things under the sun that there's nothing new under the sun. Everything's just going to keep on happening like it's been happening. And a lot of people don't believe that, because we've seen all these scientific wonders that have taken place. I've often thought about my grandfather, who was born 1867, just after the Civil War. When he's a young father and husband, Indian Territory in the 1890s. Never drove a car, never owned one. We went from the time when people got about in wagons, went to the outdoor privy if they were fortunate enough to have one, lived in simple homes that had no insulation except a little wallpaper, maybe, on the thin walls. And no underpinnings on the house. To see men drive in automobiles and fly in airplanes, and had he lived a bit longer, he'd have seen them go to the moon. All very remarkable. But I want to say this, that the seasons continue just as they were, that the motions of the universe have been unaltered by all of that. It's had as much influence on the circumstances of the world in which we live as if a gnat passed over the earth and dropped an eyelash. And man remains the same, with the same gnawing, intense desires and longings within him, with the same emptiness that can only be filled with one thing. That will not change. And the future will not change it. We're not going to wake up in 1994 and find out that being rich is going to make us wonderfully happy and contented, and it's all we'll ever need. We're not going to wake up in 1994 and find out that having this wonderful job that I'm going to get, or getting this wonderful family that I'm going to have, is going to be all that my heart desires, and I'll be contented and satisfied with that. We are not going to wake up to that, because it never has been true and it never will be true. I'm thankful for my family. I never dreamed it would be that good. I actually thought for some time that I probably would never marry, though I didn't see how I was going to make it that way. But I thought maybe that's the way it's going to be. And then, of course, you never know if you're going to have children. That's something that's not a given. And Wilma and I were blessed with children. And you never know how that's going to turn out. And it turned out well. All three of our children love the Lord. I have more than one son-in-law. You know one of them well. You know the other one a little bit. But both of those sons-in-law can stand before the assembly and exhort in the sound doctrine ably. Good students. A son who can do the same. But it... And the grandchildren. Oh, well. It's wonderful. But it might not have been that way. It might have been that I would spend my life alone here, and it would have been my task, whatever the circumstance, to spend it for God. And to do it gladly, and to do it with an open and full heart, and to recognize that nothing I invested there would ever be lost. Don't despise today. Fill it full, not just of good things, but of the thing that matters most of all. And then thirdly, recognize that the problem has never been too little time. How often do we say it? It is almost. It's a truism, you know, that we say, all of us say, I just can't find the time. Well, if someone said you only have 24 hours like everybody else, 24 hours a day, that's what's apportioned to every man. And so if you can't find the time, then I don't know what the problem is. I don't know what my problem is if I think I can't find the time. My sense always is that the work is longer than the time. The hurrier I go, the behinder I get. I sometimes wonder. Anybody that's seen my office knows that I'm well behind. But I've got the time to do what I need to do. I've got the time for that. It never has been a case of too little time. It's a question of our values. We invest our lives based upon the values that we have. What's most important to us? You can make a judgment that's fairly accurate in the lives of other people about what they value most by how they invest their time and their energies and their thought. It comes out in their conversations. You can see it in where they are, what they do. And I am confident that I am just as transparent to others. And I believe truly that if there's anybody in this world outside of God Himself who is able to look at me and know where I'm investing my time and whether or not I'm investing it according to the principle I've espoused that God is more important than anything else, than I am. I'm able to do that. You're able to do that. You know whether you're investing your life as you ought to invest it or not. You say, I always wanted to learn more about the Bible and be a real Bible student. Well, why haven't you become that? Well, I couldn't find the time. You didn't use it. You had it. If somebody else has become that, they took the time that you used for something else and invested in study. It's, of course, amazing that people who say that God is all can walk out of this building on Sunday morning right after the worship assembly and leave the Bible study behind without a backward glance and think of themselves as God's children. Don't even want to hear His word. And they don't think, some of those who are older, that they're setting an example for the young people in this assembly that is horrific. I hope you do steal out and sneak out. Because it'd be a tragedy for some of these young people whose lives are yet in formation, who need to understand the singular importance of narrowing the focus of their lives to what is absolutely essential, and to see someone with your experience and with your years, what you've known of life, and all the blessings you receive from His hand. So get out of here to the thing that really is important to you. Now, that's what we have to face. And we have to face that television set. We have to face so many things. And how we're investing our lives, what it says about just exactly who we are and what we're about. The two texts that we looked at this morning in Ephesians and in Colossians says we need to understand what the will of the Lord is. That's how we redeem the time. That's suggested in that passage. And the second passage talks about walking in wisdom toward them that are without. Our attitude toward others. Attitude toward God. Attitude toward others. So we'll be able to answer everyone in the way that we ought to answer. And that suggests to us we've got to be concerned about lost people. So here we are. Some of us with statistically probably a lot of years left. And some of us statistically probably with not many. But the answer is always the same to both. We've got to find time. If I can use that expression. We've got to find the time to be converted to Christ. You notice I didn't say join the church. You notice I wasn't even talking about joining the local church, which you do join. As opposed to the body of the disciples, the general assembly and church, the firstborn, which you can be added to as a consequence of being converted to Christ. Some of us who have joined the church have not been converted to Christ, and I mean that the local church. The only kind of conversion there is conversion to Christ. And some of us haven't had time for that. We haven't had time even to say these few words. Jesus Christ is Lord. We haven't had time for that. But we need to find the time. Too busy with schoolwork. Too busy with the job. Too busy with other things that have occupied you now. And you're saying one of these days, I'm going to take care of that. One of these days may never come at all. And of course, you've heard that before and already laid that back. But they may not. This is your life. You don't have tomorrow. Every individual that dies unconverted and unsaved is an individual that sometime in his life, sometime in her life, said, I've got to do that. I must do that. You know that's true. And so here we sit in this assembly saying, yes, 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 I must do that. And the devil will keep you on that track as long as he can keep you there saying, I've got to do that someday, because it won't cost you one bit of energy and one bit of pain and one bit of conviction or one bit of activity to say, one of these days, I'm going to do that. And we've got to find time to know God. To know God. Jesus said to Philip, have I been so long time with you, Philip, and you do not know me? 15th chapter of John. How long have we been in proximity to spiritual things? How long have we been in the kingdom of God? And still we do not know Him. We don't feel Him a part of our lives. He does not sit at our right hand and we do not sit at His. In consciousness, in awareness of what He wills for us and what He does for us and all that He means to us. But we live our lives in another compartment, sealed off from the consideration of God until we come to an occasion like this. We can't know God that way. We know God by two avenues. Number one, learning what His will is. Number two, doing it. Doing it. Experiencing doing it. Experiencing God by sharing in His purpose and plan for us. By paying whatever price is necessary. We need to come to know Him. For this is life eternal, said Jesus in His prayer to the Father, that they should know You, the only true God, and Him whom You have sent. And we're going to have to find time to be transformed. Transformed. That was the purpose. To make us godly, to make us Christ-like. It takes time to do that. And if you don't invest the time, and you keep on pushing out of your mind any self-evaluation, blame everything on somebody else, blame it on God, blame it on your circumstances, instead of wrestling with the great truth, and that is my life in the purpose of God, and the grace of God's in my hands. What about the future? It's up to me. We think about the future. Our only problem is we don't look far enough down the road and ask just exactly where is this road leading? If I keep on this road, if I keep taking one step after another, where is this all going to end? You walk the road, you reach the destination, and it's heaven or hell. God wants you to go to heaven. The devil's doing his best to send you to hell. And you're going to make the decision here. And I'm going to make the decision. And it's going to be made in today's, now, in these precious moments that our lives are made up. And you cannot kill time without injuring eternity. Time is the servant of eternity. Here we live in order to live somewhere else. Here we act in order to be somewhere else. That's the dream and purpose of God. And some of us don't yet know what time it is. We don't know what Romans chapter 13:11 observes, and that is that now is our salvation nearer to us than when we first believed. Time is shortening. We don't understand the lesson of the parable of the fig tree and the vineyard in the 13th chapter of Luke, verses 6, 7, or thereabout, 6 to 9, I think, where a man comes who's a vineyard owner and he tells the vineyard keeper, he says, this fig tree here has been sitting here for 3 years, and I've come looking for some figs and I haven't found any figs. Cut it down. It's just a burden to the ground. And the vine dresser said, let's give it one more year. Let me fertilize it and dig around it and see if we can't get it to do something. Some of us may be on borrowed time. The Lord may have come looking for some fruit in our lives for a lot of years and seen nothing. How many more years do you think? He'll let you and me cumber the ground, burden the ground, receiving all the good things, giving nothing back. Or it's 1994. But that's not as important as the fact that it's now. It's now, it's today, it's our lives. We don't have any of them. And so I urge upon you that you make that decision now that you've thought of, considered many times. But I want you to focus your mind today. Put all your courage in it. And all your energy in it. And just do it. While we're standing and singing.